Hey, thanks to Good Beer Passport for supporting Heritage Radio Network. Get your Good Beer Passport now to explore some of New York's best craft beers. Learn more at goodpassports.com, a supporter of New York City's July Good Beer Month.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show recording live at the Gate Bar in Brooklyn with Mike Hinckley from Green Flash and his crew, Allie and Mira. So this is a special show for me. Mike and Lisa from Green Flash have been good buddies that ever since they started coming to New York City, I don't know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They've been doing events.
Yeah, 8, 9, 10 years ago.
Events with us with Jimmy's number 43. We've had a few radio shows. You know, and it's cool that they're back in town, and we're going to talk a little more about it. So everyone just go around the table, introduce yourselves, and say your names.
Mike Hinckley, I'm founder of Green Flash Brewing Company.
Allie Santones, regional manager for Green Flash.
Mira Bray, district manager for New York Green Flash.
Great. Let's just talk about what you guys are doing here, because part of the show is about the business of craft beer. I know you guys are from San Diego. You've opened a brewery in Virginia. But now you've got Mike here, you know, working, you know, the region. So what are some places that you took him as part of your sales trip?
We've been kind of on a wild ride this week. We wanted to, you know, touch base with all of our distributor networks that are in the close proximity. You know, touch base with Union Beer, Craft New York, and Craft Beer Guild of Connecticut. And we're able to visit some of our longstanding accounts as well as some new accounts that we've got some great permanent business in. So we were able to touch base with Jen from Spring Lounge, and unfortunately Catherine from the Tiger wasn't here this week, but you know, they're obviously another great partner of ours. Got to see Jerry over at One Mile House, obviously visited Jimmy's.
That was fun on Monday. Yeah, and Mike's got a special Alpine.
And we're here at the gate today.
Yes.
Yep.
And Bobby from the gate says, hello to one old schooler from another, to Mike.
Right.
Well, let's have a little cheers to that.
Cheers to that. So, you know, Mike, we go way back. You know, we've had a Christmas dinner at Jimmy's number 43. And I remember when you guys were rolling out some of your Belgian-inspired beers like Rayonvert and you know, Le Freak. You know, just tell us how you got started. I don't think we ever did one of those stories before. When you first, did you work in a pub at some point? Did you ever own a pub?
Yeah, so I had a first career out of college. I was an accountant, and I hated it, and I did about 10 years. And so that's, you know, just hated it. And eventually I bought a pub, and I went to school at Cal, and my college beers were Sierra Nevada Anchor Steam and Bad Homebrew. And you know, so I was always a fan. And so I opened this little pub. It was tiny, about 1,000 square feet, and I put Sierra and Anchor because those were my college beers I liked, and I put Stone and Ballast on. It was 1997. That was their first year. They were locals to San Diego, and Guinness and Bass, and so I had it like a better beer bar or craft beer bar, and you know, I didn't really do it on purpose. It's just the way it worked out. And you know, some years went by. I invested in another brewery that tanked, and you know, in the late 90s when it all kind of fell apart the first time. But then in 2002, Lisa and I started Green Flash, and just when it started to, you know, not be a horrible idea and just a bad idea to start a craft brewery. So, yeah, so that was kind of the start, and went from the retail end to the brewery.
That's news to me. You know, we're here at the gate getting ready for an event tonight with Green Flash and some of your union reps, and big shout out to our Union Beer Distributors, Supplier of World Class Ales and Lagers, who sponsor this show. So, you know, so in 2002, you guys opened a beer bar, and you opened a first brewery.
Yeah.
I mean, did you guys have a tasting room at the time, too?
Yeah, you know, tasting rooms weren't really a thing then. We actually gave the beer away for free to people that were, they would come in and buy growler fills and refills and occasionally buy a case of beer to take home, and we had little tiny plastic cups and a Costco plastic table we would put out right on the brewery floor and give them some free taste while they were picking up beer to go. It wasn't the same as it is now. But it was pretty cool. It was back in the, you know, I look back on it fondly. You know, it was a little tiny space, and lots of people came to the brewery, and then, so we had a little tiny tasting room. It was only open on Friday afternoon and Saturday afternoon and Sunday, and that was it.
And then what were the steps, you know, you opened a brewery, when did you first start selling, you know, outside of your region?
You know, we started in 2002, sold our first keg, a keg of Green Flash Extra Pale Ale to Jimmy O's in Del Mar on November 15th, 2002.
You remember that, don't you?
I do. You know, it was the only keg we ever sold them. Well, I think maybe, you know, 10 years later we wound up selling them some more beer. But they were kind enough to put one on. Nobody bought it. Nobody drank it. Eventually it went through that one keg, and then but we had some other accounts, and that's when we started. But really, Green Flash started at the Oregon Brew Festival of 2003, when I had the idea that, you know, West Coast and East Coast IPAs were starting to become different things, and you know, we hadn't really thought about the idea of West Coast IPA as was a style, but later that year, I went to the brewer. We hired Chuck Silva that November, and I still had this notion about what a West Coast IPA was. And Chuck came to work for us, and he fixed a couple of our beers that were pretty mediocre and made them great. And he got my confidence, and I went to him and I said, "Hey, can we make the benchmark West Coast IPA and call it West Coast IPA? You think we can do that?" And he goes, "Well, he's Chuck, right?" "Yeah. Of course I can do that." You know, he's very confident. So, you know. But anyway, so we made West Coast IPA in March in 2004. And then we became a brewery, right? About 6 months later, New York was calling, and Philadelphia and Colorado. And, you know, kind of we struck a chord with that beer. And then, you know, so in 2005, 2006... West Coast IPA kind of became a big thing, and we were self-distributed in beer then, and we couldn't really handle the orders and stuff, so we went to our local distributor, who basically killed our business in San Diego. You know, just calling it like it is, you know, they weren't ready for it and they couldn't handle it. And in order to pay the bills, I started returning phone calls from Philadelphia and New York and Colorado and New Jersey and places like that, and sending them our West Coast IPA. That's, you know, why I didn't have to go back to being an accountant or something like that. So that made us a company.
Were there nights you stayed up and you wondered if you were going to pay your bills or not?
Only for the first, you know, 15 years, including last night. But we broke even in year five. So in our fifth year, I stopped refinancing my house and borrowing money from friends and that sort of thing. In the fifth year, when we broke even, we didn't have a tasting room paying the bills, so we had to make our money making a case of beer and a keg of beer and shipping it around and you know, kind of doing it the hard way back then. So,
you know, now I think people think that it's an easy business to get into if you have money to open a brewery, but we know that's not the case. But what, you know, what are some of the things you're up against? I mean, you're not just making beer and everyone thinks you're making a big profit.
Well, I guess it depends on when you're talking about. I mean, the beer business now is nothing like it was 15 years ago. Hell, it's probably not anything like it was 5 years ago. But, you know, right now, it's the big challenge is how crowded it is and how many breweries there are and, you know, that sort of thing. Back then, it was trying to convert a Bud Light line to a West Coast IPA line. You know, we don't...
Another challenge.
Yeah. I mean, you know... Allie and I, like, it was kind of a weird thing for me when I said to her yesterday, I said, "How many pints are in a half barrel?" And it's 124, and neither of us knew the number.
But, I'm throwing out 160, he's throwing out 130. Yeah, but, and yeah.
You know, 15 years ago, I knew every little bit of beer, you know, math, because I was trying to get a bar that had no craft on to put one craft line on. And trying to do the math about, well, if you charge 50 cents more per glass, You know what I mean? And there's so many pints in a keg. I mean, that was how we used to sell a lot of beer back then. Now it's, you know, trying to squeeze into, you know, be one of all craft taps online. So it's a totally different deal. It's like, you know, the world's a lot different now.
Yeah, what's it like for you guys selling? I mean, Mira and Allie, you know, do you find that people, you know, are responsive to the Green Flash brand?
You know, I mean, the area that I cover, I get to see a lot of different markets. And I would say specifically in, you know, the Northeast and in New York, you know, there's that big haze craze right now. And everybody wants unicorns and one-offs. And that's great. But at the end of the day, you know, people are just sampling that beer. And they're not going to be consistent customers for sure, you know, and they're going to constantly come back to us. So we're actually seeing a spike across the board on things like West Coast that, you know, people know when they buy this, they're going to get a quality product time and time again. And, you know, the people that are buying our beer, they're customers.
Yeah.
And they come back over and over again.
And you know what? I mean, we're biggest supporters of New York State and local beer. But, you know, this year in the New York City Beer Week, I actually started going back to some of the West Coast breweries we hadn't really been paying attention to. And every month we're doing the West Coast Craft Beer Pioneer Night just because there's so many good beers out there. And I think people do want the diversity, too.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the beers we tasted. Mary, you gave us one from the draft.
We started with Passion Fruit Kicker, yeah, that we have on draft here right now at the gate. It's an American wheat-style beer with passion fruit juice and passion fruit black tea. It's just like a little taste of summer and... And it's also, you know, we can it, which is awesome, because then you can take it with you when you go to the beach or you go, like, fishing or camping, and it's, like, it is like summer in a glass. It's really sweet and tart, but not going overboard. It's just perfect combination. And
seems to be the thing now, like, you know, mm-hmm. wheat beers with fruit. It's almost like we're going back to, that's what it used to be.
You know what, one of the things that's big difference now in the market, which I love, actually, you know, for years we made double IPAs and barley wine and Belgian triples and quads and stouts and you know, craft was all about big beer, extreme beers, you know, or palate wrecker and all of that. And now craft is squeezing into those occasions that used to be reserved for industrial beer. And there's a lot of breweries making nice lagers and nice pale ales and blonde ales and wheat beers and... you know, and so it's just, I think it's, you know, it's part of the evolution, which I really love because I want to drink beers when I'm at the beach or, you know, watching football game with the guys or, you know, just hanging out. And it doesn't have to always be about, you know, the beer. It just can be about enjoying the times with your friends and drinking quality brew. So now, really, craft is really taking over those moments. You know, so.
Yeah, I feel like for so long everything went up to the doubles and the triples and the, you know, just how far can we blow out your palate? And you know, that went on for a little while, and then everybody went into the whole session IPA craze, which I think the last time that you and I spoke was about session IPAs, and that was probably, you know, 2.5-3 years ago. And we hadn't even come out with Jibe yet. You know, we've got our Jibe Session IPA now, which is in cans, which is awesome. 4%, you know, really low-calorie beer. And you can have a bunch of them. And, you know, everything kind of went lower. And now everybody's kind of evening out. So we've got this kind of, you know, nice middle ground. And, you know, we've kind of filled in all the blanks. So you've got your, you know, your big doubles. And you've got your, you know, 4% sessions. And now we've got, you know, like Soul Style, perfect case of a, you know, 6.5% IPA. Nice and juicy and, you know, exactly what people are looking for. And, you know, that's something that you can have 4 or 5 of where, you know, if I do that with a palate wrecker, you guys are going to have to carry me home.
You know, Mike, the other night you came into Jimmy's number 43 and you were teasing me. You said, I never thought I'd have cans at Jimmy's number 43. But I also never really thought that Green Flash would be in a can. But now everyone wants cans.
You know, it's where people want the beer, and I was afraid of cans early on because I associated cans with crappy beer. You know, I mean, just, you know, my dad drank, you know, Black Label and Hams and crappy beer and out of a can, and I just, you know, I was afraid of the association. I didn't, you know, but it is a quality container, and if you do it right, if you have low dissolved oxygen and you know, in the can, and they're a fantastic carrier. And you know, there's something about the can. It's exciting and it's fun. So we're doing it. You know, I mean, the customer gets to pick. You know, we laughed a little bit about some of the beers we made that we thought were fantastic that we don't make anymore, and how I would get some hate mail for not making them anymore. And it's like, you know, I hope you, well, you should have bought some more. You know, I mean, we got to give the customer what they want. So, and the customer wants cans. So when Green Flash did it, we just made sure we did a really good job of putting the beer in a can so that it would have long shelf life and it would taste good and the quality would be there. Because that's the main thing for us is, you know, the liquid. And so you can count on Green Flash. Everybody knows they can count on Green Flash to make fantastic beer. And when we put it in a can, it's the same way.
Yeah, we've evolved a lot, you know, even just within the 5 years that I've been within the company. You know, there was a point in time when we had nothing but, you know, double and triple IPAs and big Belgian beers. And now we're making things like C2C Session Lager, which, and in a can, which are, you know, completely...
That's what we're tasting right now.
Yeah. That's what we're drinking right now.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about a change in direction.
It's May 18th, yeah. And it's 85 degrees in New York City.
Yeah.
And we're
drinking Green Flash Lager in a can. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah.
You know.
But it works so well. Goes hand in hand together.
No, there was another one that you made a few years ago called the East Village Pills.
Yeah, back in the day, we did a real bohemian-style Czech Pills. I think this is... The C2C lager is really what we wanted our lager to be. It's you know, lower on ABV, but it's a Zwickel lager. Okay, so it's the lower ABV lager, but it's partially unfiltered, and it gives you great body and mouthfeel and full flavor. I mean, it's a combination of light and refreshing and
Do
complex
any of you know,
and full
you know
flavor.
What the term Zwickel refers to?
It's no, unfiltered German lager.
Yeah.
Well, that's the style, but it comes from, because that's the key that the brewery owner had, the Zwickel, and the unfiltered lager would be what, it was like the owner's reserve.
Ah. No kidding.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
I like
that's
Zwickel.
Oh, that's, I didn't know that, Jim.
Beer well, history here.
Well, thanks for teaching the brewer about beer, right? That's awesome, man.
We'll be back in a short minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, Good Beer Passport is a supporter of today's show. Get your Good Beer Passport now and you'll be able to enjoy draft beers and flights at some of the city's best bars and breweries all summer long. They're only $37 each and redeemable between July 1st and September 4th. A portion of the proceeds benefit God's Love We Deliver and Heritage Radio Network, that's us. Learn more at goodpassports.com, a supporter of New York City's July Good Beer Month. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special, it's May 2017. We're at the Gate in Brooklyn, one of our favorite Good Brazil bars. And we're giving a big shout out because by the time you hear this show, they will have celebrated their 20th anniversary. So we got Mike from Green Flash and his crew. So we're talking about Zwickel and the styles. And I remember when we first met, you know, you guys were talking about the Ray Vert and the Green Flash and the things about San Diego to you. But what were some other steps that you went through? Now, you know, you get in Chuck Silver as your first real brewmaster was a big step. A few years ago, we met Dave Adams in your tasting room. Let's talk about some of the different steps you've made and some of the key personnel that you've, you know, brought in over the years who've been important to you.
Yeah, well, you know, if I've made any, you know, the business has grown and it's kind of a big business now. And actually, if I've, you know, made any good decisions, it's really been about who I hired, right? And number one in that was bringing my wife on, who really knew how to, she started it with the whole idea that our brand had to have a soul, and she really understood that. And
cheers to Lisa Hinckley.
Yeah, cheers to Lisa.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you guys always did come up as a family, because when I first met you, you'd come with Lisa, you'd bring your brewmaster.
You know, and so I'll just enter, before I get back to the you know, that other stuff, I'll just say, you know, Christmas about 7-8 years ago, that was awesome, right? So we wanted to come into New York for Christmas, and we asked you, can we have Christmas dinner at 43, and you'd never opened it up before. It was always just a day it was closed, and you opened for us and our friends, and we had about 20 of us. You know, I was born in New York and I have friends here and that sort of thing. So we had a big party and wow, that was one of those, you know, we got so many great days over the 15 years of being in this business. That was definitely one of them, you know, really memorable. So anyway, thank you for that, Jimmy.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, you know, Dave Adams runs all of our tasting rooms and all that, but he's our beer education guy and he goes around the country, helping training staff and he works with the sales team, and you know, just a super passionate, fun guy that really loves beer, you know, that sort of thing. He just does a great job, and, you know. And Jim Kenny, our VP of sales, is our absolute road warrior, you know, ex-Marine.
Hungwa Jim.
Hungwa Jim, you know, hardest working guy in the beer business, no doubt about that. And Chuck actually moved on and opened Silva Brewing Company. We're real proud of that and real proud of him and the equity that he was a part owner in Green Flash and the equity that he built in Green Flash is what, you know, provided him the, you know, what he needed to open Silva Brewing and buy the equipment and open his facility and do all that stuff. And you know, we're still tight and good friends and we went up and celebrated with him at his grand opening. We've already collaborated on a beer effort with him and stuff. And so, you know, I'm proud of the stuff he's moved on to do. And then we've hired Eric Jensen, who's our brewmaster now, who is, you know, equally talented with a different set, I'd say, of skills. But, you know, just a super talented guy and does a great job for us, too. So, you know, we just have a bunch of great people at Green Flash. And that's really the one thing I've done right is just bringing the right people, you know.
So. Yeah. And how important are the distributors to you?
I mean, we can't get the beer to market without them. You know, it's we make the beer. They get it to distribution and get it on the shelf, get it on tap. And, you know, we have a team of 35 around the country that basically assist them. But, you know, our distributors are key. And then there's the retailer, right? The retailer's got to really have a passion for Green Flash and help us sell the beer
and care about their lines and
educate
their staff. You know, I mean, it's everybody's involved. It takes a village.
Yeah,
you know?
It really does. And so... Then like our marketing team back home, I mean, their job is to make people pull it off the shelf or you know, ask for those pints, you know. So it takes a lot. It's, you know, to connect the dots between us and our fans, you know. So there's so many people in that chain that are critical. They're all critical, and you know, distributors keep part.
You say the right things, man. You know, we walked in, he's wearing the Alpine T-shirt, and I asked you about that the other day. Tell us, I know you guys, you've some relationship with Alpine, but
yeah.
Tell us how you guys first met. You know, you started Green Flash and Phil and Alpine. I know there's a backstory there.
Yeah, so we started Green Flash in 2002, and Alpine started in 2002. Well, before that, they were contract brewing some beer at Alesmith. But they started their own brewery, opened their own little brewery in 2002, and we've been friends the whole time. About half of the equipment in their plant is stuff that they bought from us, used when we grew out of it. We made a good amount of beer for them before we ever merged our companies. We've just been really good friends for a long time. And then, you know, Pat, getting a little older, he retired from the fire department, and you know,
I said Phil, but it's Pat.
Yeah, it's Pat and Val, Sean McElhenney.
Got some crew joining us here at the gate. Looks like it's gonna be a big party tonight with Green Flash.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough. I have my my daughter Sarah just who lives here in New York, and you know, come sit and drink some beer with us. So Pat. You know, he was kind of, you know, he's 65 and thinking about what to do with the rest of his life and does he want to build another brewery and all these things. And you know, we got together. And so, you know, the McElhenneys and the Hinckleys now own Green Flash and Alpine. You know, I mean, really to simplify it, but that's about it. Been real easy relationship because we've known each other 15 years. And you know, we make the beer and... You know, it's just been really good. They trust us, and we trust them, and we work together. One of the main things is, you know, the only real big requirement was that we make the beer fantastic. And they had a lot of faith that we would do that because we were already making some of their beers for them for a while.
Like a lot of real small breweries, Alpine was culty. You said that people were trading it.
Yeah, so that was Pat's big thing, is he didn't really enjoy the idea that so much of his beer was going through the post office before getting to the person that would drink it. You know, it was being like beer traded and going to, you know, around the country. And, you know, he just wasn't real comfortable on how the beer was being treated between when it left his brewery until it got to a customer. So Green Flash had enough distribution that he said, hey, I want you to send some Alpine everywhere so that people stop sending it through the mail. You know, I don't like if my beer's, you know, been in three different people's trunks before someone gets to drink it, you know. So we ended the beer trade, and that was real important to Pat and Val and Sean. And important to us, you know. We wanted to get out there and do a good job of the beer, and we wanted it to be well represented too.
It was great when they came out here last year for the real launch for Alpine. So I think it was about a year ago, February. And, you know, I mean, it was bitter cold, and, you know, these poor guys come in from California, and I'm hustling them over to, like, you know, 10, 15 events in a row. And Pat and Val really, you know, they loved it. They loved coming out here and meeting people that knew about Alpine and been trading, you know, trading for it for years. And, you know, now they're like, awesome, I can get this, you know, treated the right way. I can get it fresh, and I don't have to worry about where it's coming from or what condition it's coming from. So it's been a real treat. And we've got one of our newer Alpine beers here on draft. This is our Windows Up. No?
Duet.
Oh, it's Duet. I'm sorry. Okay, well, I mean, well, hey, hell, that's a classic Alpine.
It's
a
classic. It's the godfather of IPAs with Alpine right here.
You're like me, Allie. I always mix things up.
Hey, you know, I hadn't drank it yet.
But it's still fun.
I got all these glasses in front of me, Jimmy.
I'm just throwing beers at you.
But no, I mean, Duet, you know. I was up in Boston a couple weeks ago, and, you know, the guy was looking for an IPA line, and we already had a Green Flash handle in there, and I was like, wait, I got a perfect IPA for you, and I'm telling him all about it. And he was like, are you overselling? And I was like, taste the fucking beer. And he tasted it. He was like, nope, you're not overselling at all. That's fucking perfect. Let's go.
It's good.
Yeah. You know what's funny is you never know what's going to move. And, like, we got in your C2C lager, and when I turn around and it's gone, you're like, whoa, I didn't think about that. And the same with Alpine. We had the Windows Up, the IPA bottles in. And again, it's like people order it, and then you realize you sell out when you don't think it's going to move.
Yeah.
And that's just something cool about the retail connection where you can see.
Yeah.
I don't know how you attract your business. And that's what I wonder. I remember you had the Imperial IPAs. This was 10 years ago, Imperial IPAs. And, you know, you came out with Lafrique, which are massive. And I don't drink those beers as much as I used to.
Yeah, you know, most of us don't really as much as we used to. It's,
we're getting old.
Yeah, maybe we're just getting old, Jimmy. But I really think it's a fantastic thing where craft used to be like this, I don't know, alternative thing where we were just, you know, drinking big, strong beers, and it was all, you know, and then it got to be, hey, on my regular situations, I can go to a bowling alley and drink really solid craft beer from, you know, Firestone or Lagunitas or Green Flash or Bell's, and you know, they're in the bowling alley. We're in the bowling alley now. It's amazing. When it used to be, we were just in it, weird, eclectic places, you know, and especially weird places. I mean, we still are. We're, you know, going to be in those, you know, really crafty bars and making cool things. But now, I mean, you go to a baseball game and you watch the Mets or the Yankees, and you might get a 6-pointer or, you know, or a Green Flash. Who knows? I saw in the Cleveland Indians were on TV, and I saw a Green Flash thing go on their scoreboard.
Wow.
And I realized I didn't pay for it. I don't know what happened, but whoever the concessionaire is selling Green Flash in the Cleveland Indians ballpark.
That's our distributor out there.
Yeah. And there's a logo on the scoreboard for Green Flash. It blew my mind.
Oh,
you know,
that.
It's like, where are we now? When it used to be we were hiding in little weird bottle shops and just eclectic places, and now it's like craft beers all over the place. That's the cool part. Cheers, brothers.
Guys.
You know, all the talk about growth and, you know, different breweries, different business models, I'd say that. You know, you forget that, you know, business is about growing. And I think you guys are doing it right. I'm not going to get into other conversations because people get hung up on it. But I like seeing that you guys have grown and you're still able to, you know, keep your little family together. But, you know, the move to open another brewery on the East Coast in Virginia, you know, how did that happen?
You know, Jimmy, it's a little weird is that Green Flash grew different than most other breweries. Because I don't know if it had to do with, you know, the what happened in our early years where we made West Coast IPA and it was a huge hit and people really dug it, but we were still tiny. And our local situation with our distributor didn't work out so well. And so we started shipping the beer around where people wanted it. And then we wound up in a lot of places. And then, you know, just as a means of survival. So we wound up where we sell, you know, 50% of our beer on the West Coast and about 40% of our beer on the East Coast and not a lot in the middle. And that's where we wound up. And so when we were approaching capacity on the West Coast at our brewery, I mean, it was just, I mean, I'm not a rocket scientist, you know, at the brewery where the people are drinking the beer. And, you know, when we put it in Virginia Beach, it was second day freight from Miami to Boston. And that was already a third of our business. So, you know, I know it's kind of weird, you know, but that's just the way it happened for us. And so we got to, we just got to be versatile and react to the situation that we're in. And that was it. It wasn't like 10, 15 years ago I said, I want to have a brewery on both coasts. I mean, all I really wanted to do was, you know, serve hoppy pale ale in San Diego and maybe not have to go get a real job, you know.
How did you used to ship beers from the West Coast and the East Coast?
Well, we've always shipped them refrigerated freight. It was about a six-day truck from San Diego to New York, and now we're 1 to 2 days everywhere on the entire East Coast. Two-thirds of the U.S. population we get to from 1 to 2 days. So beer's still shipped all refrigerated. You know, quality's number one. And but we cut 4 to 5 days out of every transportation of the beer. And that can only it makes us not only is a beer fresher when it gets to the customer, but we can be more reactive for our retailers and our distributors. If there is a freight problem, we can, you know, send another truck or what have you and get it there on time, you know. So it's working out well, you know. And in Virginia Beach, if you ever go down there, our beer garden there is amazing. It's basically a city park attached to a brewery. It's about an acre and a half, big old growth oak trees and pecan trees, sitting walls. You go there on a Saturday afternoon, there's like beach blankets out with little kids banging around and, you know, soccer balls and dogs, and it's just amazing. It's like a little city park attached to a brewery. It's a wonderful experience. So we think people will go there and get connected to Green Flash just like they do in San Diego, and then, you know, go back to, you know, New York or Connecticut or, you know, North Carolina and buy the beer forever, hopefully.
And then East Coast versus West Coast. So, you know, you guys, your sales force is on the East Coast. Are there different beers that are more popular on the West Coast versus the East Coast, you know, from your product line?
You know what? It's weird, you know. We don't tell the customer what to drink. They tell us what to make. And, you know, different cities, different things happen. West Coast has been our number one. West Coast IPA has been our number one selling beer for 15 years in a row, and it's still growing. It's our flagship. It's our heart and soul. But right now, like, Passion Fruit Kicker is doing really well in Chicago and in places in the Northeast. Soul Style rocks Virginia. For a while, a stout that we made was killing it in Southern Florida. Now we don't make that one anymore. But you know, we make what the customer makes, and it could be a different beer in every market, and that's okay with us. We just we let the customer tell us. We don't tell them.
And the change from bottles to cans. Remember, you said what size did you used to make? You used to make like a bomber or a 22 ounce.
You know, for the longest time, we were. We did more what they call single serve bottles than six packs or four packs. 22 ounce bottles were the majority of our sales. Actually, draft is still the majority of our sales. So you know, places like yours doing in the gate here, you know, selling a lot of our beer on tap and pints is still the majority of our sales. But we went from having a lot of 22 ounce bottles and some 12 ounce to having a lot of 12 ounce bottles, and now we've introduced 12 ounce cans. And we also have 750 milliliter bottles through Cellar 3, which is our barrel aging facility. So where we used to just be that bottle shop, bottle share, beer geek bar occasion for people, we want to be across their occasion. So we want to have a Cellar 3 bottle of barrel aged wonderful beer for date night, and we want to have West Coast IPA, which is what people think about Green Flash from a decade or so ago. And we want to have a six-pack of Soul Style, and then we want to have a can of C2C Lager. So whatever our fans are doing, we want to be with them.
That's awesome. We're just drinking a lot of beer here at the Gate in Brooklyn. Back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Well, God gave Noah the rainbow sign and said no more water than a fire next time. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. We're a nonprofit and you can become a member. So, we've got the Green Flash crew here at the Gate in Brooklyn. And there's another beer we drank. What is that, guys?
Soul Style IPA is, Soul Style refers to a method of surfing, right? So the young guys that, they're shredding, right? They're back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Us kind of older surfer guys, kick your back foot down on the back of the board, walk out to the front, and use Soul Style, which means you soul arch, bend your back, look up, make it look like you are standing, just chilling on your surfboard, making it look easy. And that was kind of the thought behind it, is because we made so many big and double IPAs and crazy IPAs that, when we were going to make a single IPA, that was going to be Soul Style for us. It was going to be making it look easy.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to get back to your San Diego roots, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now I was like, I want to drink more of this beer.
Yeah.
Speaking of easy, our GFB, easy. That's easy drinking right there.
That's the last thing we've done. GFB, easy drinking, easy to think about. GFB, it doesn't even
have
a name.
GFB? What is it?
And mostly people are calling it good fucking beer.
Because it is.
Green Flash Blonde, is that it?
Whatever you want it to be.
If you want it to be Green Flash Blonde, then that's what it is. If you want it to be great for bowling, or great for bocce, or great for the beach, or golfer's favorite beer, or, just great flavorful beer, that's what it is. It's easy drinking, easy to think about. What hops are in it, I don't know, I don't care. You know what I mean? It just tastes great. It's got good Green Flash quality, consistency, flavorful, but it's crushable. Craft meets crushability. I trademarked that. I'm sure that's a waste of my time, but you know what I mean? Craft meets crushability and GFB, so.
Well, I like your San Diego, origins are coming out, because when we first met, you talk about how the Ray Vert, the Green Flash, tell us about that again. That's a San Diego thing.
Yeah, so the Green Flash, really, what a Green Flash is, for people who don't know, when the sun sets over the ocean under just the right conditions, you get this really cool smutting of the sunset that turns green above where just after the sun disappears. And it's a big thing in San Diego. If you're on your surfboard or on your sailboat or, sitting at the beach, or if you're on your balcony, and you happen to have a nice ocean view, it's like every day, if you can, you look for the sun, you watch the sunset, and you look for the Green Flash, and it's a very big San Diego thing. And when we started Green Flash, that was the analogy, and that's where Lisa was talking about, Green Flash has to have a soul. And the whole idea was, under just the right special conditions, these beautiful things can happen. And it's about the beer, it's about the company we made, it's about the people that we interact with, and our employees, and our customers, and our retailers, Jimmy, like you, and just, all of these things. That was what it was about, just creating these special moments to interact with people.
What's your philosophy, Mike? Because somehow you've been able to grow. You had some experience early on. You had that pub and you had a first brewery. But somehow you've been able to grow and keep your good vibe going. And I think that's a unique quality. What is that quality? What is it about you and your wife?
I think it has to do with the people I've surrounded myself with. We're a hard-working, hard-charging, passionate group of people that take our work very seriously. But we want to enjoy it, and we want to be doing the things that all day long, you know, and make a living and pay our bills and do all those things. But we want to enjoy our life, and you know, that's where it started. I had a great job that made way more money than I ever made in beer way before, and I didn't enjoy it. And so we got these three pillars about these amazing products. We have to make these Green Flash. The beer's got to be fantastic. And I take a lot of pride in our business acumen. And I want us to be an industry standard for running a business. And then the third part is I want it to just be a fantastic place to work for the people that give so much to me. You know, everybody on our sales team, we call them the Road Warriors. They're the 60-hour-a-week, you know, passionate, committed people.
60. Back. I wish it was 60.
Yeah, you know. But
well, Allie, how many states are you in right now?
Actually,
you're in New York, but you've been
for a fair amount of time. I've been covering a good chunk of the country, but you know, we're constantly adding new salespeople, and we actually just sliced my region in half. So now I'm just going to be looking after New England, New York, PA, New Jersey. Within there, I've got some amazing sales folks. Yeah,
too, right?
I used to be. And now we've moved somebody up to take over the Lake region and take that off my hands, and that gives me some time to focus more here, which is fantastic.
Well, that's what, you know, we called them the Road Warriors because Allie had about a quarter of the country to manage, and maybe she had like two reps working with her or something like that, and you know, if we keep growing the business and we invest everything back, it's like, you know, I mean, we never pulled any money out of this business. We just keep reinvesting and hiring more people and growing it and growing it, and it's a great thing. But now Allie's territory is down to, you know, like just New England, Philly, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. So that just means we hired six or seven more salespeople to squish that territory down. So
Now I can work with my guys a little bit closer. I can work with my distributors a little bit closer. You know, and just preaching Green Flash, man.
And for you, Allie, you know, working with retail, you were also working with off-premise.
I'm with everybody.
Yeah, are there a lot of the same people that you're working with, or do you feel like there's a lot of new faces? You know, what's it like being out there in sales?
Obviously, you know, you travel around and you've got your classics that you're going to see, you know, like Mike Schatzel up in Buffalo, who's, you know, building a little empire up there. He's an amazing job with craft beer. He's been really good to Green Flash, so thank you, Mike. But, you know, and then you've got new bottle shops opening all the time. You've got bars that have never done craft before that are transitioning into craft, which is really exciting. The segment in general is just, you know, growing so much. So it's not so much that there's so many more people drinking beer, but there's so many more people drinking good beer. And that's really exciting. And those are the people that we need to, you know, we need to reach out to and we need to interact with.
Here's a tough question. So let's say I'm opening like a little restaurant in a small city in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm a chef, been a chef in New York. I want to move out to a smaller city, which a lot of guys are doing.
Yep.
And I'm going to have some wine, but I want to have a small beer program. What are a couple of your beers that would do well for, like, you know, a little bistro, farm-to-table type restaurant? If I could say, I need two beers.
You need two beers from me.
Yeah.
I would probably go with Soul Style for a single IPA because it's not gonna blow your taste buds out, but it's gonna accompany your foods really well. So if you got something a little spicy or something with a little bit more meat, Soul Style is gonna go really well with that. But then say you've got like a fish dish or something that, you know, is maybe a little bit more of like a oil, you know, based sauce, you know, nothing that's too like red meat heavy. Sorry, I'm Italian, you know. And something like that.
Sorry.
I think, you know, you go with your C2C, or you go with like the passion fruit, something like that. Or, you know, even the GFB, I mean, that's a beer that you can drink anywhere. You know, and that's something easy breezy. You know, don't think, just drink.
What's it called? Great fucking what?
Great fucking beer.
Did you make that name up, Mike?
Yeah, I did.
I bet you did. I thought
so. Yeah, I did.
But yeah, those
are I got a 10-seat F-bomb a little bit, so I figured GFB, Great Fucking Beer, would work out for me.
So give me a couple of stories, you know. So worst day of your life ever since you opened the brewery?
Worst day of my life ever. In about year four, when we had, we were way behind on our bills, and the TTB, which we pay excise taxes to, we were filing all our tax returns but not attaching the checks. And they showed up and said, hey, you know, you got to pay your tax bill today, or we got to close you down. So that was our lowest moment. So went to Lisa and I said, hey, honey, I gotta dig some money out of the savings account and do all these things, and I gotta pay the TTB today. So that might have been my lowest moment. And
ouch!
Thank God I got my wife has been by my side the whole time and allowed me to do that. And so that might have been my lowest moment. You know, otherwise I've been having a ton of fun in this. It's that's why I'm here. It's a fun industry. I'm surrounded by cool people. But until we got to break even, it was pretty tough, man. I gotta tell you, it's I wasn't a rich guy before, had to bootstrap it up, but we made it. So
let's talk about that Christmas dinner. I think it was 2011, and a big shout out to Rob Hodson, who works with the Sheehan family and Grape Brewers and Union Beer Distributors. And he called me up and said, "Hey, you want to have a Christmas lunch with Green Flash guys?" And for me, that's what, as a beer bar guy, that's my fantasy, to have someone seek you out and do a special, event like that. But what the question is you guys made it a whole special week. I think you, Blind Tiger, Jimmy's Number 43, another place, you sent each of us like 8 special kegs. Yeah. But I just wonder how you guys do that. How do you?
Well, on that particular weekend, that was another one of these weird moments, really. We had the great Christmas dinner with you. And like I said, that was one of our favorite moments. But we also had, I think it was like 35 or 37. We set the record for having the most draft lines and firkins and set up. So we had the most beers on tap at Top Blind Tiger ever. And I think that still stands. But we had our guy who ships the beer didn't put the pallet of the specialties on the truck. And we had, the whole week set up, and we had all our friends coming, and the Blind Tiger people were counting on us, and our friends at Union Beer were counting on us. And 2 days before the event, and we're 6 days away from New York by truck, realized that the beer hadn't shipped. So we shipped refrigerated air freight, a pallet of beer to the Blind Tiger. We didn't make enough money in New York that year to pay for that freight bill. But it's one of these things, you got to stand by your distributors and your retailers and our friends in the industry, and we bit the bullet. And we did refrigerated air freight a pallet of beer overnight to the Blind Tiger.
Allie's sweating over there.
Yeah, no. I'm just really glad I wasn't involved at that point.
Yeah.
That happened.
And Grant, I don't know where you are, buddy, but, Grant's my guy. He didn't put the pallet on that truck. But Grant was our guy. We didn't give him too hard a time, but I will now, so if you were hearing this. It was about a year of your salary, buddy, to get that pallet of beer to New York. But you did it, though.
So.
Yeah, but it was a great event and a great week. Super fun, but yeah, that was a weird moment. Air freight refrigerated coast to coast overnight is expensive.
And then today, you guys are in town. You got Mike in town. It's a big deal. You haven't been here for a couple of years, have you?
Yeah. So I used to come to New York, maybe 3-4 times a year. My daughter lives here, and it was a great chance for me to get out and sell beer, and then also see Sarah and stuff. But we built a brewery in 2011 in San Diego, and then another big brewery that just finished in Virginia Beach. And in between, we hired a couple hundred new positions or something. My job became a lot about it, being an organizational manager. So I got tied up, and I didn't get to get out in the trade as much anymore. But now I got a guy who's doing that, and I get to do the part of what I like to do is get out in the trade and talk to people and sell beer. And so now I'm doing it again. So, it's a good thing, because I wasn't very good at being that organizational manager guy, and I didn't enjoy it that much. So now I'm doing what I like, and hopefully I'm better at it.
So of all the beers we tried today, we're going to go back over to the bar here at the gate. What beer would you be drinking the rest of the night?
If I'm going to drink a beer the rest of the night, it depends on what kind of night I'm going to have. I might drink Soul Style all night tonight. It's just a wonderful IPA. It's very citrusy, very San Diego, very, light. So San Diego style, if you will, is going to be light in color, light in body, and have a ton of hop forward flavor. And Soul Style is an amazing amazing IPA, and I love it. So I'm gonna drink about 4 pints and then take an Uber back to the hotel.
I'm all about the PFK today. Yeah, it's too. 95 degrees outside. That beer, passion fruit kicker. PFK. So you know, and that little bit of tartness to it, but it's a little bit dry in the back from the black tea, and it just sings summer to me. You know, and I'm ready to get some color. Let's go. Let's have some beers and relax and get a little suntan.
You guys are having a good time, man.
Always. Thanks, Jimmy.
Always. Thank you.
Last thing, so just, you know, being on the road, I like this side of the business side. Being on the road today, where did you take Mike? Because, you know, you've been jam-packed. You're taking him to different accounts, you know. Tell us about your day just today.
Today we had a general sales meeting with our distributor up in Connecticut, and then we had a nice sit down meeting with management up there. And then we went and saw a really great account in New Haven.
Barley Grill.
And then we hit the road. We came back down, stopped there over in Westchester. They've got a nice West Coast line up there for us. And then we sat in traffic for 3 hours, and I almost pulled my hair out. So, you know, when we walked into the gate today, you know, we're getting all of our beers together. And I was like, great, we got the beers. Who's got my Jameson shot? And
another big shout to the gate, and let's just toast to Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
We're celebrating their 20th
anniversary.
Yeah, Bobby.
Bobby and Jay.
And it's a great neighborhood bar. And Mira, one thing you were talking about, there's some people say this place or my place is a dive bar. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a dive bar because of the, you know, the community and also the quality of the products.
Right.
How would you describe this bar, the gate?
Well, it's like a hybrid. It's a craft dive bar. So it's got the essence of a dive bar. Like, it's homey. It's comfortable. You can talk to everyone at the bar. You're having conversations. So
dive bar is not a negative kind of
thing. It's not a negative thing. It's not a negative thing at all.
I think this is a neighborhood bar.
There's
this
great beer on tap. Like, it's a staple thing.
Like your place, man.
It's homey.
And Jimmy's 43 the other day. I mean, it really threw me back. My first trip to New York was my first stop after Green Flash came. It was my first trip. Went into your place, and, you know, I love it. I mean, if you want to call it a dive bar, I'll affectionately call it that.
Exactly. So I was saying to you, it's like, I love a dive bar. I seek that out. I want a dive bar with good beer, because those are the two things I love together. Community, you know, like, people who want to talk to each other and get to know each other and drink good beer while they do it. Like, and this is the type of place where you do that.
So, Jimmy, what are you going to drink for the rest of the night?
Yes.
The Alpine.
Yeah, all about the
duet.
I love those. I've become a big fan of your Alpine IPAs, and that's actually what I have at home right now. Alpine Windows Up in bottles. Mm-hmm. And everything about it, the bottle itself, the style of beer, it's a beer I'm looking for. You know, I'm so into local beers in New York, but sometimes I want to change a pace. And the West Coast has a certain style that other beers don't. So,
Right on,
Jimmy. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You guys, thanks. Yeah. Once again, just say your names and... we'll wrap it up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mike Kinkley, Green Flash.
Allie Santone's Green Flash.
Mira Bray, Green Flash.
All right, we'll catch you next time. David, our engineer, will be cleaning this up. And we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.